Front Page Dramas. The roar of the presses. Every week these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed, 15,000 an hour, until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly has gone through in full color.
Great fiction.
Interesting features.
Factual articles.
Color illustrations.
All these are found in every issue of the American Weekly. All these go to make up the nation's reading habit, another name for the American Weekly, which comes to you every week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. This week, we depart from the usual procedure in presenting a single front-page drama based upon one feature of the American Weekly. Instead, we are dramatizing short excerpts from several of the many outstanding articles, stories, and educational features which make next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly a veritable feast of good reading.
Great Queens of Egypt Who Have Gotten Lost.
That's the intriguing title of a fascinating article by the distinguished French authoress archaeologist Madame Genevieve Tabouille, whose famous biographies of Nebuchadnezzar, King Tutankhamun, and King Solomon have all been worldwide bestsellers. Among the many fascinating stories she tells is the revenge of Queen Nitocris, wife of the pharaoh Mycerinus, who was murdered by his brother Khephren more than 2,000 years before the birth of Christ.
Here, my most gracious majesty, is the great palace you commanded me to build deep beneath the face of the earth. This is the banquet hall. The walls of rare pink granite.
Yes, yes. It's not the walls that interest me most, but the great doors I requested.
There before you are the entrance doors that swing closely together, and when locked, will not admit even the most minute grain of dust or breath of air.
Well done. And yet there is more. The great sliding panel I ordered.
Fashioned in the greatest skill at my command, and strong enough to withstand the heaviest weight mortal mind can conceive. We have tested it, as you ordered.
And all is well?
Yes, most learned queen.
Go then, say unto my lord chamberlain to send out the invitations for the feast at sundown on the morrow.
It shall be as thou commandest, your majesty.
Thy virtue cherished, thy affection mourned, thy honor hallowed and thy fame adorned. My serene sleep, resting in death slumber, free from the intrigues that encumber those who sit upon a sacred throne, while I, with Nitocris, shadow-like and dim, droop in my loneliness, bereft of him, mourn his sad doom and feel the tidings nigh. For how should kindness live when he could die?
Why stand you here, noble sister, making him for your dead?
Oh, to you, loyal brother. You are right. I have spent too much time in mourning, dwelling upon the virtues of my murdered husband, the king. But now my hour has come. The hour of vengeance is at hand.
It has been said you have built this palace deep underground to hold a feast, to be celebrated by the enemies of Mycerinus, those who murdered him. What reasoning is this, fair sister?
Good reasoning, loyal brother. For in truth, this is not a banquet hall I have built, but a tomb for his murderers, and you shall have a hand in my vengeance. For tomorrow, after sundown, when the feast is at its height.
Silence! Silence, all! Hear ye, the tocsin rings, signaling the entrance of the beautiful Nitocris, widow of my dear departed brother, who swears she will share my throne with me. Look toward the great wall there, for through that panel will enter the Perona Nitocris.
Through the secret panel, tons of water poured into the great banquet hall, while the huge doors which formed the only entrance and exit closed tightly, trapping the members of the nobility who had taken part in the murder of the queen's husband. There was a secret tunnel behind the panel through which the waters of the River Nile had been diverted to flood the huge banquet hall and drown the treacherous guests. Is a fortune kicking around in your attic? That's the title of another interesting article to be found on the woodcut page in next Sunday's American Weekly. Right here in America, year after year, literally millions of dollars worth of riches are destroyed or sold as junk. This occurs because the owners do not know what treasures are in their hands. Take the case of Emmett Barnes, who bought an old New England farmhouse.
You're right, Mr. Mead. It's a very nice old house, and the price is right. I'll take it. Wait, this door here, I guess that leads to the stairs up to the attic.
Yep, right you are, Mr. Barnes. If you want to go up and look around, nothing up there but a lot of old junk Granny Meekins had stored away.
Well, we might as well go up and look it over.
Yeah, all right. Sure is musty up here. Place needs good air and out, Mr. Barnes.
Yeah.
I'll get that old camelback trunk and that old rocker and them cider jugs taken out. And we can burn them old piles of paper for you.
Wait.
So, what?
Great Jesus, ghost. I can hardly believe it.
What's the matter? Did you find something?
I'll say I did. Why, these old bundles of paper.
Oh, I guess that ain't much. Old Granny Meekins never had much. I guess that's why she never liked to throw nothing away.
Good heavens, man. Do you realize what these are?
Yeah? No, I can't say I do. I can't see it matters much as long as you're buying the place now.
Yes, I guess that's right. Well, come on, Mr. Lee, let's get back downtown to the bank and close the deal.
Yeah, that's all right with me. This musty air up here is bothering me. Hey, Beaver.
Just a minute.
Yes.
Say, isn't there a key to lock this attic door in?
Oh, shucks, no, Mr. Barnes. Ain't ever been a key to the front door, even. Old Granny Meekins never had any need to go locking doors. You could get one made cheap.
Oh, no, never mind. I'll close it tight. It'll be all right.
Before we go, Mr. Barnes, do you want to tell Sarah and John to start cleaning up the place? They're good workers. They'll fix it up in fine shape for you.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Sarah?
Yes?
Mr. Barnes is going to buy the place.
Oh, that's fine, Ann. Yeah. I know you like it once it's fixed up.
Yes. He's going to sign the papers now, and while we're gone, he wants you and Jonathan to get busy and start cleaning it up.
Yeah, that's right, but start down here on the ground floor, and don't touch upstairs. I'll be back in about an hour.
Don't hurry, Mr. Barnes. We'll do a right good job. Don't worry.
Well, we're all set now, Amy. Cash paid, tax receipts, deeds, everything cleared up, eh?
Yeah. Everything in apple pie order, Miss Barnes. Meekin Place is yours. Yeah, now that we got business over, what do you say to a bit of lunch? I told my missus I might be bringing a visitor home, and if you ain't ever tasted one of my Jesse's pies, you ain't rightly lived.
Well, I'd like to, Mr. Mead, but I'm rather anxious to get back to Meekin Place.
Yes, sir. It stood there all these years. Another hour won't hurt it none.
No, it isn't exactly that, Mr. Mead. But those old papers I found in the attic have got me all excited. It looks to me as if there are about 1,000 old pamphlets and papers there that go back to the Revolution.
Yeah.
Those should be very, very valuable.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, Mr. Barnes. If they'd been there that long, ain't no one going to disturb them now. Besides, my old lady will be mighty disappointed if you don't come. Oh, come along now, please.
Oh, very well, Ennis Mead. I guess everything will be all right. Well, Sarah! Jonathan!
Here we are, Mr. Barnes. Over here by the fire.
Sarah! Tell me quickly, that stuff, those papers up there in the attic. What did you do with them?
Burn them. What in tarnation do you think we were going to do?
You hired us
to clean this place, and we're cleaning it.
Oh, good Lord. You burned them all?
Certainly. I've been piling the trash there, and John's been burning it.
Yeah.
Oh, John, wait. Don't throw that bundle in the fire. What? Hold it.
Well, land of Goshen, I swear to goodness, that fellow must be crazy, making such a fuss over a pile of old papers.
The one small bundle Barnes rescued from the fire proved he was right. He received $500 for it. The remainder, all burnt up in the fire, were worth $5,000, or twice as much as the entire house and farm he had bought. Remember, an old chair made in America in 1780 is worth more than the best sword made in Paris in 1580. A book about Indian captives published in Carlisle, Pennsylvania in 1808 is worth more than most books published in London in 1608, even more than six pages from the Gutenberg Bible. Read all about treasures of Americana in Is a Fortune Kicking Around in Your Attic in next Sunday's American Weekly.
Queer echoes of Uncle Sam's call to arms.
Here is another feature article that will both amaze and amuse you. During the course of the registration of the 17 million men under the Selective Service Act, some pretty unusual things happened. Some comic, some tragic, and others quite remarkable. For instance, the case of the 4,000 Navajo Indians of New Mexico.
You sent for me, Judge Beam?
Yes, Tom, I did. As Indian agent, I think you ought to be a member of this registration board.
Yeah, what's up, Judge? Thinking I'm a little trouble with the Navajo?
Well, it seemed like they stirred up over something. Old Rusty McGowan rode in the crack of dawn this morning and said there was plenty of excitement way back on the reservation all night. Ceremonial fires, tom-toms beating. Rusty says they were holding a war dance.
Oh, I don't believe it. We haven't had the slightest suspicion of trouble with the Indians. Oh, old Rusty's been drinking again.
No, he hasn't. Says at daybreak they were swarming out in this direction on ponies and foot in full war regalia. There, you hear that dynamite? Look there, yonder over the hill. They're coming, all right.
They sure are. Well, I can't figure out what stirred them all up.
Boy, oh boy. They're on the warpath right enough. Look at them.
You better let me handle it, Judge. I'm pretty close to most of their leaders, and I think I can handle them. Let's wait right here.
Greetings, Mr. Sumner from Chief of All Navajos. We have come to make war for Great White Father. Navajos love Great White Father. He calls us to war. We come.
Well, greetings, Alamano, and to all the Navajos in the name of the Great White Father. But what of this war you speak of? There's no war. The Great White Father is at peace.
No, that is not so. See, many braves have papers calling them to war. If one brave is called, all braves come.
Well, those papers do not call your braves to war, Alamano. The papers you have merely summon you to come, only to leave your name. Then you return to the reservation and wait until those braves among you are summoned for duty.
My brothers say you insult us. You call us, but do not think us fit to fight for Great White Father.
The Indian agent and the draft board almost had a riot on their hands. The Indians appeared in full ceremonial dress with ponies, tomahawks, bows and arrows, and complete regalia of war paint ready for battle. They could not understand being called to war only to fill in a few forms and then be sent home. This incident is but one of the many queer echoes of Uncle Sam's Call to Arms, another of the many interesting feature articles and stories to be found in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper.